Each spike, positioned very carefully, can determine how the recipient's body is changed by hemology. A spike in one place creates a monstrous, near-mindless beast. In another place, a spike will create a crafty, yet homicidal inquisitor. Without the instinctive knowledge granted by taking the power at the Well of Ascension, Rashik would never have been able to use hemology. With his mind expanded, and with a little practice, he was able to intuit where to place spikes that would create the servants he wanted. It is a little-known fact that the Inquisitor's torture chambers were actually hemologic laboratories. The Lord Ruler was constantly trying to develop new breeds of servant. It is a testament to hemology's complexity that, despite 1,000 years of trying, he never managed to create anything with it beyond the 3 kinds of creatures he developed during those few brief moments holding the power. 44. Vin crept down the stone stairwell, small sounds echoing eerily from below. She had no torch or lantern, and the stairwell was not lit, but enough light reflected up from below to let her tin-enhanced eyes see. The more she thought about it, the more the large basement made sense. This was the Canton of Resource, the arm of the ministry that had been in charge of feeding the people, maintaining the canals, and supplying the other cantons. Vin supposed that this basement had once been well stocked with supplies. If the cache really was here, it would be the first that she had discovered hidden beneath a Canton of Resource building. Vin expected great things from it. What better place to hide your atium and your most important resources than with an organization that was in charge of transportation and storage across the entire empire? The stairwell was simple, utilitarian, and steep. Vin wrinkled her nose at the musty air, which seemed all the more stuffy to her tin-enhanced sense of smell. Still, she was grateful for Tin's enhanced vision, not to mention the enhanced hearing, which let her hear clinking armor below, an indication that she needed to move quite carefully. And so she did. She reached the bottom of the stairwell and peeked around the corner. 3 narrow stone corridors split off from the stairwell landing, each heading in a different direction at 90-degree angles. The sounds were coming from the right, and as Vin leaned out a bit more, she nearly jumped as she saw a pair of guards standing lazily against the wall a short distance away. "Guards standing in the corridors," Vin thought, ducking back into the stairwell. "Yeoman definitely wants to protect something down here." Vin crouched down on the rough, cool stone. Pewter, steel, and iron were of relatively little use at the moment. She could take down both guards, but it would be risky, since she couldn't afford to make any noise. She didn't know where the cache was, and therefore couldn't afford to make a disturbance. Not yet. Vin closed her eyes, burning brass and zinc. She carefully and slowly soothed the emotions of the 2 soldiers. She heard them settle back, leaning against the side of the corridor. Then she rioted their sense of boredom, tugging on that single emotion. She peeked around the corner again, keeping the pressure on, waiting. One of the men yawned. A few seconds later, the other one did. Then they both yawned at once, and Vin scuttled straight across the landing and into the shadowed hallway beyond. She pressed herself up against the wall, heart beating quickly, and waited. No cry came, though one of the guards did mumble something about being tired. Vin smiled in excitement. It had been a long time since she'd had to truly sneak. She had spied and scouted, but had trusted on the mists, the darkness, and her ability to move quickly to protect her. This was different. It reminded her of the days when she and Rhene had burgled houses. "What would my brother say now?" she wondered, patting down the corridor on unnaturally light, quiet feet. "He'd think I've gone crazy, sneaking into a building not for wealth, but for information." To Rhene, life had been about survival, the simple, harsh facts of survival. Trust nobody. Make yourself invaluable to your team. But don't be too threatening. Be ruthless, stay alive. She hadn't abandoned his lessons. They'd always be part of her. They were what kept her alive and careful, even during her years with Kelsier's crew. She just no longer listened to them exclusively. She tempered them with trust and hope.
"Your trust will get you killed someday,"
Rean seemed to whisper in the back of her mind. But of course, even Rean himself hadn't stuck to his code perfectly. He'd died protecting Vin, refusing to give her up to the Inquisitors, even though doing so might have saved his life. Vin continued forward. It soon became evident that the basement was an extensive grid of narrow corridors surrounding larger rooms. She peeked into one, creaking the door open, and found some supplies. They were basic kinds of things, flour and the like, not the carefully canned, organized, and catalogued long-term supplies of a storage cache.
"There must be a loading dock down one of these corridors," Vin guessed. "It probably slopes up, leading to that sub-canal that runs into the city."
Vin moved on, but she knew she wouldn't have time to search each of the basement's many rooms. She approached another intersection of corridors and crouched down, frowning. Ellen's diversion wouldn't last forever, and someone would eventually discover the women she'd knocked unconscious. She needed to get to the cache quickly. She glanced around. The corridors were sparsely lit by the occasional lamp. Yet there seemed to be more light coming from the left. She moved down this corridor, and the lamps became more frequent. Soon she caught the sound of voices, and she moved more carefully, approaching another intersection. She peeked down it. To the left, she noted a pair of soldiers standing in the distance. To her right, there were four.
"Right it is, then," she thought.
However, this was going to be a little more difficult. She closed her eyes, listening carefully. She could hear both groups of soldiers, but there seemed to be something else. Other groups in the distance. Vin picked one of these and began to pull with a powerful riot of emotions. Soothing and rioting weren't blocked by stone or steel. During the days of the Final Empire, the Lord Ruler had set up soothers in various sections of the Ska slums, letting them soothe away the emotions of everyone nearby, affecting hundreds, even thousands, of people at once. She waited. Nothing happened. She was trying to riot the men's sense of anger and irritability. However, she didn't even know if she was pulling in the right direction. In addition, rioting and soothing weren't as precise as pushing steel. Breeze always explained that the emotional makeup of a person was a complex jumble of thoughts, instincts, and feelings. An Allomancer couldn't control minds or actions. He could only nudge.
Unless...
Taking a deep breath, Vin extinguished all of her metals. Then she burned duralumin and zinc, and pulled in the direction of the distant guards, hitting them with a powerfully enhanced burst of emotional allomancy. Immediately a curse echoed through the hallway. Vin cringed. Fortunately, the noise wasn't directed at her. The guards in the corridor perked up, and the argument in the distance grew louder, more fervent. Vin didn't need to burn tin to hear when the scuffle broke out, men yelling at each other. The guards to the left rushed away, moving to find out what the source of the disturbance was. The ones to her right left two men behind, however, and so Vin drank a vial of metal, then rioted their emotions, enhancing their senses of curiosity to the point of breaking. The two men left, rushing after their companions, and Vin scurried down the corridor. She soon saw that her instincts had proven right. The four men had been guarding a door into one of the storage rooms. Vin took a deep breath, then opened the door and ducked inside. The trap door inside was closed, but she knew what to look for. She pulled it open, then jumped into the darkness beneath her. She pushed down a coin as she fell, using the sound of its hitting to let her know how far down the floor was. She landed on rough stonework, standing in complete darkness, pitch black, beyond even what tin would let her see in. She felt around, however, and found a lantern on the wall. She pulled out her flint, and soon had light. And there it was, the door in the wall leading into the storage cavern.
The rock mountings had been torn apart, the door forced. The wall was still there, and the door itself was intact, but getting it open had obviously taken some great amount of work. The door was open slightly, barely wide enough for a person to get through. It had obviously taken Yeoman a lot of effort to even get it that far.
"He must have known it was here," Vin thought, standing up straight. "But why break it open like this? He has a Mistborn who could have opened the door with a steel pull."
Heart fluttering in anticipation, Vin slipped through the opening and into the silent storage cache. She immediately jumped down to the cache floor and began searching for the plate that would contain the Lord Ruler's information. She just had to... Stone scraped against stone behind her. Vin spun, feeling an instant of sharp and dreadful realization. The stone door shut behind her.
"And that," Ellen said, "is why the Lord Ruler's system of government had to fall."
He was losing them. He could tell. More and more people were trailing away from the argument. The problem was Yeoman actually was interested.
"You make a mistake, young Venture," the obligator said, tapping the table idly with his fork. "The 6th century stewardship program was not even devised by the Lord Ruler. The newly formed Canton of Inquisition proposed it as a means of population control for the Terrace, and the Lord Ruler agreed to it provisionally.
That provision turned into a means of subjugating an entire race of people," Ellen said.
"That subjugation started far earlier," Yeoman said. "Everyone knows the history of this Venture. The Terrace were a people who absolutely refused to submit to Imperial rule, and they had to be strictly reined in. However, can you honestly say that Terrace stewards were treated poorly? They're the most honored servants in all of the Empire."
"I'd hardly call being made into a favored slave a fair return for losing one's manhood," Ellen said, raising an eyebrow and folding his arms.
"There are at least a dozen sources I could quote you on that," Yeoman said with a wave of his hand. "What about Trendelan? He claimed that being made a eunuch had left him free to pursue more potent thoughts of logic and of harmony, since he wasn't distracted by worldly lusts."
"He didn't have a choice in the matter," Ellen said.
"Few of us have choice in our stations," Yeoman replied.
"I prefer people to have that choice," Ellen said. "You'll notice that I have given the Scar freedom in my lands, and given the nobility a parliamentary council by which they have a hand in ruling the city in which they live."
"High ideals," Yeoman said. "And I recognize Trendelan's own words in what you claim to have done. However, even he said that it would be unlikely for such a system to continue in stability for very long."
Ellen smiled. It had been a long time since he'd had such a good argument. Ham never delved deeply into topics. He liked philosophical questions, but not scholarly debates. And Sazed just didn't like to argue. "I wish I could have met Yeoman when I was younger," Ellen thought, "back when I had time to simply worry about philosophy. Oh, the discussions we could have had." Of course, those discussions probably would have ended up with Ellen in the hands of the Steel Inquisitors for being a revolutionary. Still, he had to admit that Yeoman was no fool. He knew his history and his politics. He just happened to have completely erroneous beliefs. Another day, Ellen would have been happy to persuade him of that fact. Unfortunately, this particular argument was growing increasingly tense for Ellen. He couldn't maintain both Yeoman's attention and that of the crowd. Each time he tried to do something to get the crowd back, Yeoman seemed to get suspicious, and each time Ellen actually tried to engage the king, the crowd itself grew bored with the philosophical debate. So it was that Ellen was actually relieved when the yells of surprise finally came. Seconds later, a pair of soldiers rushed into the room, carrying a dazed and bloodied young woman in a ball gown.
"Lord Ruler, Vin," Ellen thought. "Was that really necessary?"
Ellen glanced back at Yeoman, and the two shared a look. Then Yeoman stood.
"Where is the Empress Venture?" he demanded.
"Time to go," Ellen thought, remembering his promise to Vin. However, something occurred to him. I'll probably never have another chance to get this close to Yeoman, Elland thought. And there's one sure way to prove whether or not he's an Allomancer. Try to kill him. It was bold, perhaps foolish, but he was growing certain he'd never convince Yeoman to surrender his city. He'd claimed that he wasn't Mistborn. It was very important to see if he was lying or not. So, trusting his instincts in this matter, Elland dropped a coin and pushed himself up onto the stage. Ballgoers began to cry out, their idyllic world shattering as Elland whipped out a pair of glass daggers. Yeoman paled and backed away. Two guards, who had been pretending to be Yeoman's dinner partners, stood up from their seats, pulling staves from beneath the table.
"You liar!" Yeoman spat as Elland landed on the dining table. "Thief! Butcher! Tyrant!"
Elland shrugged, then shot coins at the two guards, easily dropping them both. He jumped for Yeoman, grabbing the man around the neck, yanking him backward. Gasps and screams came from the crowd. Elland squeezed, choking Yeoman. No strength flooded the man's limbs. No allomantic pull or push tried to shake him from Elland's grasp. The obligator barely even struggled. Either he's no allomancer, Elland thought, or he's one hell of an actor. He let Yeoman go, pushing the king back toward his dining table. Elland shook his head. That was one mystery that was... Yeoman jumped forward, pulling out a glass knife, slashing. Elland started, ducking backward, but the knife hit, slicing a gash in his forearm. The cut blazed with pain, enhanced by Elland's tin, and Elland cursed, stumbling away. Yeoman struck again, and Elland should have been able to dodge. He had pewter, and Yeoman was still moving with the clumsiness of an unenhanced man. Yet the attack moved with Elland, somehow managing to take him in the side. Elland grunted, blood hot on his skin, and he looked into Yeoman's eyes. The king pulled the knife free, easily dodging Elland's counterstrike. It was almost like... Elland burned electrum, giving himself a bubble of false atium images. Yeoman hesitated immediately, looking confused. "He's burning atium," Elland thought with shock. "That means he is Mistborn." Part of Elland wanted to stay and fight, but the cut in his side was bad. Bad enough that he knew he needed to get it taken care of soon. Cursing his own stupidity, he pushed himself into the air, dropping blood on the terrified nobility clustered below. He should have listened to Vin. He was going to get a serious lecture when he got back to camp. He landed and noted that Yeoman had chosen not to follow. The obligator king stood behind his table, holding a knife red with Elland's blood, watching with anger. Elland turned, throwing up a handful of coins and pushing them into the air above the heads of the ballgoers, careful not to hit any of them. They cowered in fear, throwing themselves to the ground. Once the coins landed, Elland pushed off of them to send himself in a short, low jump through the room and toward the exit Vin had indicated. Soon he entered an outdoor patio cloaked with mist. He glanced back at the building, feeling frustrated, though he didn't know why. He had done his part. He'd kept Yeoman and his guests distracted for a good half hour. True, he'd gotten himself wounded, but he had discovered that Yeoman was an Allomancer. That was worth knowing. He dropped a coin and shot himself into the air. 3 hours later, Elland sat in the command tent with Ham, waiting quietly. He got his side and arm patched. Vin didn't arrive. He told the others about what had happened. Vin didn't arrive. Ham forced him to get something to eat. Elland paced for an hour after that, and still Vin did not return. "I'm going back," Elland said, standing. Ham looked up.
"El... you lost a lot of blood. I'd guess that only pewter is keeping you on your feet."
It was true. Elland could feel the edges of fatigue beneath his veil of pewter.
"I can handle it." "You'll kill yourself that way," Ham said. "I don't care, I..."
Elland cut off as his tin-enhanced ears heard someone approaching the tent. He pulled back the flaps before the man even arrived, startling him.
"My lord," the man said. "Message from the city."
Elland snatched the letter, ripping it open.
"Pretender Venture," the note said. "I have her, as you have probably guessed. There's one thing I've always noted about Mistborn. To a man, they are overconfident. Thank you for the stimulating conversation. I'm glad I was able to keep you distracted for so long. King Yeoman."
Vin sat quietly in the dark cavern. Her back rested against the stone block that was the door to her prison. Beside her, on the rock floor, sat the dwindling lantern she'd brought into the massive room. She'd pushed and she'd pulled, trying to force her way out. However, she'd soon realized that the broken stones she'd seen on the outside, the work project she'd assumed had been used to open the door, had actually had a different purpose. Yeoman had apparently removed the metal plates inside the door, the ones that an allomancer could push or pull on to open. That left the door as simply a stone block. With Duraliman-enhanced pewter, she should have been able to push even that open. Unfortunately, she found it difficult to get leverage on the floor, which sloped down away from the block. In addition, they must have done something to the hinges, or perhaps even piled up more rock against the other side, for she couldn't get the door to budge. She ground her teeth in frustration, sitting with her back to the stone door. Yeoman had set an intentional trap for her. Had she and Elland been that predictable? Regardless, it was a brilliant move. Yeoman knew he couldn't fight them, so instead he'd simply captured Vin. It had the same effect, but without any of the risks. And she'd fallen right into the trap. She'd searched the entire room trying to find a way out, but had come up with nothing. Even worse, she'd located no hidden stock of atium. It was hard to tell with all the cans of food and other sources of metal, but her initial search hadn't been promising. "Of course it won't be in here," she muttered to herself. "Yeoman wouldn't have had time to pull out all of these cans, but if he were planning to trap me, he certainly would have removed the atium. I'm such an idiot!" She leaned back, annoyed, frustrated, exhausted. "I hope Elland did what I said," Vin thought. If he had gotten captured, too. Vin knocked her head back against the obstinate stones, frustrated. Something sounded in the darkness. Vin froze, then quickly scrambled up into a crouch. She checked her metal reserves. She had plenty for the moment. "I'm probably just..." It came again. A soft footfall. Vin shivered, realizing that she had only cursorily checked the chamber, and then she'd been searching for atium and other ways out. Could someone have been hiding inside the entire time? She burned bronze and felt him. An allomancer. Mistborn. The one she had felt before. The man she had chased. "So that's it," she thought. "Yeoman did want his Mistborn to fight us, but he knew he had to separate us first." She smiled, standing. It wasn't a perfect situation, but it was better than thinking about the immobile door. A Mistborn she could beat, then hold hostage until they released her. She waited until the man was close. She could tell by the beating of the allomantic pulses that she hoped he didn't know she could feel, then spun, kicking her lantern toward him. She jumped forward, guiding herself toward her enemy, who stood outlined by the lantern's last flickers. He looked up at her as she soared through the air, her daggers out. And she recognized his face. Rhine.